Listen to the voices of our world.
Coming to the university, it's a difficult time, and you can go hungry here.
Violence against women is so normal. It's like having your cup of tea.
Beating women is a national sport here.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm Eileen Bott. Formal education is important, but sometimes lessons come from unexpected places. We spoke with students in Kenya about expectations, hunger, AIDS, culture, and violence against women. Stay tuned because you'll be surprised how much we all have in common.
Nasafiri kwenye barabara ya maisha bila kutaka Sa yoyote naweza kupata pancha Kwa hivyo naendesha gari yangu pole pole sana
Make sure you study something that'll get you a good job when you come out. Did parents drive that message through your skull when you went to college or high school? College is expensive, and if they had to pay for any part of it, they wanted to make sure that they saw a return on their investment. They didn't want to end up in debt and still have to support their children. And most kids I knew felt the same way. They chose the most practical majors with clear employment paths, rather than taking lots of drawing classes. Students at Kenyatta University in Nairobi, Kenya, had the same worries that college students in the U.S. did. They did not want to be a burden on their family. Their parents were already in debt, paying school fees or tuition for high school. But unlike American students, the Kenyans could not expect to find a job after graduation. Kenya's economy is based on agriculture, so industrial, professional, or what they call formal sector jobs are very scarce. One man told us that he graduated with a master's last year, and the best job he could find was driving 24-hour shifts in a taxi. He was supporting his entire family. 5,000 Kenyan shillings is what most students receive from the government to cover their food, housing, and book costs. That's about $65 for the year. So some students have resorted to some interesting arrangements in order to survive. To find out more about the concerns of students, Kathy Golden and Eleanor Ostrinsky went to visit Kenyatta University's chaplain, Mary Knoll father Lance Nadeau, and two Catholic community student leaders, Carol and Mupan Njoke and George Machari and Jerry. The conversation began with a theoretical discussion of higher education and moved easily to real-life experiences of hunger, AIDS, and battered women on campus and in the greater society. Here's Carol and Mupen Njoke.
I've seen my friends graduate, go away, and they don't get into the formal sector for employment. So I've been thinking, what's really the importance of coming to the university? And if I don't get to the formal sector, I'll get into agriculture or something like that for my income.
The education that I'm getting here and the exposure that you get here, it's really to open up your mind and you think of something else. Sometimes you see these chokoras, the street boys, they wake up very early in the morning and they'll correct papers from the dustbin. Whatever papers they correct, they normally sell, and sometimes they get even 200 in a day, which is good for them. What if me, I can organize and have two people or three street boys and I'll be their manager. So, but now imagine myself from the university, I start doing those kind of work. People think I'm crazy. So I think the attitude that we have is what is important and it's what is going to change us. Otherwise, I don't think even if the government is really working well and our economy is growing, it can't employ everybody who is in the university.
There's despair. There's a lot of giving up. Like, I'm a firstborn in my family, and after I'm through with my education, I'm expected to take care of my parents once they're old and can't do much for themselves. So I come here, get my degree, and I'm going back to them, telling them, Mama and Dad, I can't support myself. And I think that is one of the reasons why so many people get into drugs on campus. We've had cases of women going to the streets because we are economically badly off. I think, in fact, the biggest percentage of students on campus get their fees paid through the Higher Education Loans Board. And it's not very fair what we really get. I really do not know what I can say because the government is not helping us so much as for now. They say they'll increase the allocation for the university students. It just went up with around 5,000. And it's still not enough. Not like we'll ever have all that we need. But as university students, I need to concentrate. I need to go to class when I've had my meals. And at times, it's not the case. And I think you heard about Father talking about the needy students we feed every week. Over time, I think the number has risen. So I think it's high time we sought an alternative policy and guidelines as to how higher education is run in Kenya.
Do you want to talk about this program of feeding needy kids?
The other day, I went over to a supermarket to buy some food for students. And the woman at the checkout counter said, "Why are you buying all this food?" And I said, "Well, I'm buying them for Kenyatta University students." She said, "They're hungry?" And I said, "Yes, they're hungry." She didn't believe it because there's famine in the country now. It's affecting 3 to 4 million people. People outside of the university find it hard to believe that the students inside the university are hungry and that some of them actually faint from lack of food. But it's true. That does happen here. And one reason is some of the students, Carol mentioned these loans that the students get, but what she didn't tell you is often the students will take that loan that they get them for their own support and send money home to support their families and pay for the school fees of their younger brothers and sisters. So what we've been able to do is we have a little store where we sell things, and the profits that we make from that, we buy the basics that would help someone survive for about a week. And so this last week we assisted 40, and there were more that we could have helped, but we just ran out of money and food. So coming to the university it's a difficult time, and you can go hungry here.
There's plenty of people who are hungry in the United States, but I think it's on a different level. So can you explain what is the little package of food that you give people? What's in it?
It'd be the staple food here is something called ugali, and it's like cream of wheat. What would it be like? It's like a big ball of dough. That's your daily staple. So we'd give them that. We give them flour, unga. We would give them two kinds of beans. We'd give them some sugar, and we give them some cooking fat. And that would enable them to survive pretty well for a week. And even the students that we give that food to, some of them share it with somebody else. This is really, you know, subsistence. But it was an idea of the students. It wasn't my idea at all. The student who wants assistance must write a letter giving us some idea of his/her financial situation. And once we have that information, there's a student committee that evaluates the request, and they make the decision whether the person gets the food or not. So that's how it works. We could probably feed not 40. We could probably feed 400 a week if we had the money and the time.
There was a girl in Mass who was in the third row. She had a T-shirt on that said, "I know my status." And on the back it said, "Do you know yours?" Mm-hmm. How is AIDS affecting your lives, your future, all of you?
This semester, there was a campus thing. Everybody was going for the testing. But I'm yet to know the follow-up because imagine myself, I'm HIV positive. I can't support myself with the basic things like the food, breakfast, and whatever. So sometimes I ask myself, what's the need of these campaigns? And there's no follow-up. I go there, I present myself. I'm HIV positive. Now, what is the next move? So no matter what maybe the government might be doing in mass education on the scourge, they have to have a department which will cater for these people who are HIV positive. Yeah. Then the problem in the village. The education system in Kenya is improving, but still in some regions, many people never went to school. So you can imagine now, especially when you are poor, the most interesting thing and the only pressure they can have is sex, nothing else. So you can imagine a boy in the village, he don't care, he don't have hope. But here is a girl who is presenting him herself. What do? You just have it. So that's how I see it.
Just like George has said, there was a campaign last month really aimed at telling people facts about AIDS, and also towards the end there was free voluntary counseling and testing. And I was talking to some of my friends, mostly those people who already knew their status who went for the testing. Majority of those people, maybe who've been in risky behavior, they've been sleeping around, most of them are afraid. And I was thinking, if I've been risky behavior, I will be afraid to go for testing. Because for me, AIDS is not just another disease. It comes with stigma, discrimination. And then no matter how you may have contracted it, people will just look at you and start saying, Carol has been sleeping around. And once I'm told that I'm positive, I'm in campus, I'm struggling, I'm the hope of my family. The first thing is that I'm dying, instant. And I will not be able to go on. I will start thinking, what's the need of this education? Yeah, and most of my friends were telling me, no, if I have to go for testing, let it be after graduation. Then I'll be able to deal with it better because I'm through with my classes. I don't have books to think about. And I have to look for a job if I have to survive to get my drugs and all. And yeah, I almost tell them, if you think you're not sure of your status, don't go. I told them that. And people were saying that there was a sick girl. She passed away early this month. She had to be kicked out by the university. And she left a list of 16 men. And these 16 men have girlfriends on campus. And then we had a group. It's calling itself I Choose Life. They advocate abstinence. I really thought it was a good idea. And people started going there. You're given the hard facts about HIV/AIDS. And some people are preaching the message. Some are getting it. But there are some who are so insistent, like, sex, it's there. It's not a big deal whether I get sick. People are just confused.
And what happens in your community back home?
In my community, people are sick. I come from a division that is rated to have the highest rate of infection in the district. People say it is because of business. There is money. So people have money to take very cheap liquor. We call it changa or kumi kumi. And this cheap liquor, which is coming along with cheap sex. So many people are sick and people don't know about testing. Like where I come from, if you want to have a church wedding, because the churches are very strict nowadays, they insist that you have to go for testing before you have your wedding in church. And the rest of the masses don't know. And I think it's also because of the fear. And people are also not very informed. And people say it's a myth. People say it's urogi. Urogi is witchcraft. And the services that the government is supposed to be offering have not really gotten to the grassroots. And the situation is real bad because once people are sick, these are people who are very poor. That means they cannot have enough food, not just enough food, but proper diet that can protect them from other opportunistic diseases. And like the women are mostly in trouble because they offer their home-based care to their sick. They work without gloves. Maybe these people have diarrhea. They have open wounds. And the women who are the caregivers in most cases are really at risk. Yeah, there are so many orphans. There's so many affected and infected people from where I come from.
Getting an education does not only happen in school. What positive or negative messages did you receive from your family and community? How did they affect your life? Email us. Go to www.marynoel.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOEL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL.